All right, folks, welcome back to the program. Gesundheit with Jacobus, Carol Wilcock, my guest, as well as Dr. Natalie Gonzalez. And we are discussing quite a few things over here on the show. We talked about the effect of the awareness of disease and pathogen and what it does to our stress level. And so how are we handling the stress? Do we start feeding the disease, or do we actually, can we de-stress and start taking control of the disease? And then we've been talking also about myths and misunderstandings. And before we go back to Carol and Natalie, we have a caller on hold. Good morning, caller. Thanks for joining today's program. What is your name? How can we help you, please?
Good morning, everyone. This is Steve-O.
Hi, Steve-O. I got your messages. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. That was just a little off-air humor.
That was good. Very good.
Yeah. You know, today I'm glad to hear you guys talking about the missing link, and I'm not talking about evolution. You know, when they study cultures for health and longevity, you know, they look at diet and they look at genetic predisposition and any number of things. And stress is often included, but it usually takes a back seat, you know, in the discussion.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad, you know, that you're bringing that out, as you often do, Jacobus. But, you know, when we stress, the communication is intensified between the hypothalamus and pituitary, and that just causes the adrenal glands to produce an inordinate amount of these stress hormones, you know, primarily dopamine,
yes,
epinephrine or adrenaline, norepinephrine, and especially, you know, cortisol.
Right.
And
yes,
it's, I believe, the imbalance and the overproduction of these things that cause the problem, because if this is long-term or a chronic, you know, situation where a person is constantly stressed out, whether they realize it or not, you know, clinical research has linked this to all kinds of problems, you know, with the heart circulation. I mean, chronic stress has, you know, been linked to have a shrinking effect on the prefrontal cortex and even a decline in the hypothalamus.
Absolutely.
And everybody knows, I guess, about adrenaline, epinephrine, its effect on, you know, blood pressure, the heart, you know, arrhythmias, all kinds of blood vessel constrictions.
Yes.
So I'm just glad you guys are bringing that out, because I think that, I mean, everybody's always looking at diet and these other factors, which they are important, you know, don't get me wrong. But I think this is probably equally as important, if not more so. And I guess that's where I'd like you guys to take the discussion, because, you know, this is something that's, I think, not talked about as often as some of those other, you know, factors that affect our overall health and longevity. And thanks for taking my call. But
thanks,
I just wish you guys would just delve into that just a little more, because I think it is just a vital link. You know, when so many times people pass away and they've been, you know, doing everything right, you know, I think a gym fix,
yes,
you know, and their diet and their exercise routine, their regimen and everything. And yet the stress factor is not, I think, given as much priorities as it should. And thank you for taking my call. And I just appreciate the program today, guys.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
All the best.
Absolutely.
You know, I go ahead, Carol.
Well, I went to that stress management course. It's an instructor course. And that was, you know, back in, what, 06 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing course, because it does affect so many different areas of our bodies, and understanding and having your personal tool chest of how you deal with stress. So no matter what that is, you have to successfully develop a tool chest of your very own, of what works for you,
yes,
in a place where you can completely let go and de-stress. And that's a critical component to help. And it's statistically proven, but it's not necessarily embraced. And if you don't put it on your schedule, it is not going to happen.
No. And how many people wear the stress on their sleeve? A lot of people carry it internally. If he talks about Jim Fix, the runner,
mm-hmm,
we don't know what was going on in his life, what stressed him out, what bothered him. Maybe he was physically pushing his body to run.
Too far.
To run, but was not feeding the body to do that kind of running enough.
Right.
You know, that is quite a demand that you put on your body, and that is, again, the coach in the mind says, let's do this, and the body says, hey, you got to feed me first, but it's mind over matter for a lot of people. And then, and to add to that, so many people carry the stress inside, you literally do not know, and all of a sudden they've committed suicide. And you go like, what just happened here? So Steve-O's point is well taken, because it is a driving force behind, and we were talking about anger during the break, what anger, the effect of anger on our system is can be very devastating.
Absolutely. And I also have come to realize that stress management is different for different people. So you have one person who believes that you have to be a marathon runner and that's the definition of health. Yeah. Well, to me personally, marathon running is not something that would be necessarily helpful for me. But if I spend an hour a day swimming in a warm pool, that's my de-stress. Other people love to run that marathon and it's the perfect thing for them. So that's why you have to customize it just to you and nurture yourself.
Yeah.
Nurture who you are, nurture your nature, and understand that if you're a fast-moving, hard-working go-getter, your version of exercise and de-stress won't be running a marathon. It might be something more like Pilates.
Yes.
Or swimming.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
That's right.
So you
good
have
point.
To really adjust that. Okay, she so would. Natalie and I had a great conversation that Steve-O talked about in terms of positive cultures. And we had a really great discussion early this morning on centurions and what that looks like, people who live to be 100 years plus.
There are populations around the world where there's a high concentration of people who live to be over 100. And there was a large study that was done a few years ago on this. And they went to various places around the world where there were these pockets of a number of people living to be greater than 100 to decide what were the common denominators among these groups of people in these different countries around the world. And some of the things that came up were some very common things among the different groups. And Carol wrote some of them down for us here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try to remember all of them. But one was that these people, even though they did not necessarily exercise throughout their lifetime or have a real strong impulse to have an exercise routine and be physically fit, they were always active. So they would always choose to do things physically rather than to be sedentary. And it was, you know, just something, even into their hundreds, they were still physically active, physically walking places instead of riding and physically doing things around their home, whether it was gardening or something that just got them out and around.
Cooking
and,
their own food, you know, just
yes.
staying active somehow. Stay in a routine that works for them.
Absolutely. Another common denominator were people who had a definite purpose for what their life was about. And in Okinawa, there were a number of, mostly these were women centurions in this population that they studied there. And these were women who were still part of the caregiving of the family. So you know, she might be 100 years old, but she would be taking care of the infant great-great-grandchild who was just born. And you could just see in this woman's eyes when she talked about this great-grandchild how much that was her purpose for living. And,
yeah.
It was very huge. But this was common in that culture. And
yes.
Social connections. There was a group of I believe, Seventh-day Adventists who were located somewhere in either Colorado or Utah. And every Sunday, as part of the family community group, they all would go out and take a walk in nature. And it was a family group that was walking. It wasn't just, you know, the little ones went out and, you know, with the big ones. It was the entire family unit that would go for a walk. And in this particular community of Seventh-day Adventists, they had a higher concentration than the normal population of centurions.
Huh.
And eating, that was the other one.
Eating.
Yeah.
Eating was interesting. What they determined in all these groups was that they tended to not be people that were overeating. Particularly in the Okinawan group, they had a saying or a cultural saying that they would eat till they were about 80% full. But across the board, all of these different groups of centurions, they were not overeaters. They were moderate eaters. They, you know, they ate for pleasure and to feel good, but not necessarily overeating.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah.
combination of different things. I agree with you.
A number of things, and you know, just things that de-stress them, I think, too.
That kind of goes back to that original story of somebody living on purpose, really enjoying their food, has those connections.
Yeah, the 93-year-old grandma.
Yeah, the 93-year-old grandma who is such a great living example of those types of habits and perspective and positive outlook. So it's a really fascinating way to look at health as opposed to looking at avoidance.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's see here. So the thing for me is that I look at some of these topics that we have that we can talk about. And one of the ones that has been so much in the news is the whole depression cycle. I see that somehow in Montana, a lot of people are depressed.
Right.
And a lot of people, there is well now number one in the country in suicides.
Yep.
And it is so sad that this is happening. And there's different reasons why I can say that is why it is. On the other hand, and then we look at homicides. People try to outdo each other with guns these days. And so we're talking about prescription drugs, antidepressants, Ritalin even included, Prozac, the combination of certain medications. What is your take on that? Is that a topic you even want to touch on, or you don't even dare to touch on it?
You know, I think we have 12 minutes left and a caller. So I mean, I have a take on that, but I actually have just a case study, and you can take with it what you want. Was a client who came in. He was actually a pharmacy student, finished his PhD, was having a hard time that last year of school, and went on an antidepressant. And the antidepressant did not react well with him. He became suicidal, incredibly depressed, horrible psychological implications for him. And so he thought, I cannot do this. I'm going to go off because it made it worse. So he went off the antidepressant. It stayed the same. Nothing improved when he went off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried a different medication, and it also did not make a change. And finally, he came in. Basically, it was a chemical damage to his neurological system and his brain and his neurotransmitters. And we worked with nutrition. We worked with homeopathy. He did hyperbaric. We went through a series. And he said, he feels much better. He's come out of that. He's working towards, you know, some better things. He goes, the biggest thing is he's pretty darn angry and realizing that he just finished a PhD in something he is not going to be able to sleep at night and pass these medications out. Mm. He says, I can't give these to people.
Wow.
Knowing that that's even a possibility, no matter how rare it is.
He goes,
maybe I'm 1 in 5 million, but I can't sleep at night knowing that I could possibly be the instrument for handing that medication out to somebody who could react the way that I did, because he almost lost his life over it.
Yeah.
So the way that we interact, like we talked about, even with melatonin being an adjutant versus something that's relaxing, is there's a risk when you take something that it can backfire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an idiopathic reaction.
Yeah. I mean, you've dealt with it in your practice. I'm sure people come in and want to have your advice and then maybe say, I really want to be on an antidepressant. How do you react to something like that?
You know, one of the instructors in our current program is a psychiatrist in Colorado, and he works mostly with children, but in general, he has a lot of problems with prescribing the antidepressants that are out there, not just with children, but with people in general. And one of the difficulties is that the studies, when you start to look at the evidence, have been skewed. Part of the reason they're skewed is because the only research reports that came out were the ones that showed positive effect.
Yeah.
All of the negative studies never got published.
Mm.
So, you know, based on the positive effect studies, you know, you could look and say, well, yes, it looks like this drug is really effective. But when you looked at it overall, it had very little effectiveness when you compared all of the studies that were both both positive and negative for the drug that was being studied.
I see.
And when we started looking at some of the herbal things that are out there, several of them could be just as effective in people with depression and especially mild to moderate depression and certain psychotic disorders. They could be equally effective with some of these medications with fewer side effects. And so, you know, this is a really big topic, depression and suicide.
Yes.
But you're right, Carol. There, these drugs, for the amount of effectiveness that you're talking about, and the number of side effects that go along with them, can be very dangerous to use.
It's really an experiment, don't you think so? It may work for some people; it makes them more livable. But if people do not understand that the possibility is there that they may be deficient in simple minerals.
Right.
Exactly.
Simple B vitamins.
Something as simple as that.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, if you want to go on the medication, there should be a begin date and an end date. Even with antibiotics, they say, take it for 10 days. Okay. Agree or disagree with antibiotics, but they usually have an end date.
Right.
But with psychiatric drugs, there is no support. It's literally give the drugs and you may be on it for the rest of your life. And I do not believe that we are deficient in psychotic drugs. And what I see often is we all have, there is a reason why we're dealing with this depression, with this feeling. Something happened in our life that we misunderstood, that we... was a trauma, a traumatic brain injury, it was a rape, it was an experience, it was abuse, it was something that we could, if we really work on it, we should be able to name it by its name and say, this is what happened to me, and I've never been able to work with that. And then if you say, well, let's work on emotional freedom technique, EFT or EMDR, or we work with therapy. There's therapy before you have to go to drugs, but how many people want to spend an hour, let's say half hour driving, hour with a psychologist, or half hour driving back to work, 2 hours a day or once a week or once a month, wherever you many times you go, to actually do this for themselves and to get it out and to start a healing process where they just simply say, I'll just take the pill. And it doesn't do the long-term effect. It starts creating scrambling in the brain.
The chemistry scrambles.
Yeah.
I have one, I was talking to one psychiatrist about this. It was over some mass shootings that were actually a couple of years ago. And he said that the majority of these shootings are really related to just a very few drugs, which have been prescribed by people who are not psychiatrists, by a family practitioner or somebody who hasn't specialized in that, and they don't even know the ramifications of what they're prescribing.
Yeah,
and so just a word of caution, and I think maybe just to end on a super positive note is that...
come on, Bill. We're going for it.
I know. It's like now we need another 3 hours to talk about depression and suicide.
Yeah.
This is really its own topic. But any time that you can, if you have a mental disorder, right, that can be from a brain injury, it can be from so many different things that can and truly easily be healed when you go back and cured. Where if you go back and do the time to find out what the underlying issues are, whether it's nutritional, whether it's an exposure, whether it's a toxin, whether it's a relationship or an emotion or how you perceived it.
And that's the whole point.
Right.
That depression is not a single factor
You're
going to take a pill for and it's going to go away. It's a multifactorial disease, just like any of the others we're talking about, and it's going to require a multifactorial solution.
One of the things
it does. That is a really good point.
Right.
Because in this case it expresses itself in the mental and emotional doesn't mean it is just because we don't see it, it's coming out sideways in whatever way, shape, or form. Mental disorders and disease need to be respected in order to heal it.
Right.
So we cannot just say, well, you're just crazy. If somebody who had to have a leg amputated is just as handicapped as for the rest of their life, like somebody who has a mental imbalance and emotional imbalance for a combination of reasons. And for many people, it was not even their fault why this happened. If you've been in the war and you've been exposed to traumatic brain injury and to explosions and death and gore and guts and all that stuff, that was not your choice. But I mean, you could have been your choice, but it's part of the job.
It's part of the job.
But it depends how you fight that emotionally for the rest of your life. And for many people, we're just ignoring the emotional effect, because somebody goes in the military. We don't know how they were raised. Some of them are ADD children who now all of a sudden get off their medication when they go in the military, and all of a sudden these hallucinations and thoughts come up in their mind, and they have a hard time processing all that.
Right.
So it is a complex issue that I think is very fascinating, and it may be an explanation why we see today in the media so many people in whatever culture and religious right. killings. What is going on in these people's minds and emotions that needs to be addressed?
Right. Well, and I think that on a personal level, for each listener who's here, is to find tools, find technologies, people, modalities, supplements, nutrition, habits that will create a shift. Because if you can ease the burden, ease the stress, and provide something that's going to support you, even one little shift a week or even a month, mm-hmm. over a lifetime makes a massive difference.
Sure, yes.
Massive
yes.
difference. And it has to be multifaceted. If you're not dealing with the mind and spirit and emotional component, and you're only focused on being super anal about just what you eat, you're missing a lot of the different components that you need to heal. And on the other hand, if you just spend all day in a corner saying om, you might be missing out some other pieces as well.
True.
Yeah, there is a time and a place for that. And I think it all started mm-hmm. in a culture, the whole meditation, yoga, and it's so popular these days. But it all started in a culture that was much more peaceful than what we're dealing with right now. It's very hard to center today and not be exposed
to all.
Yeah, you have to choose. You know,
you have to be purposeful and choose.
Well, we're at the end of the hour. Natalie Gonzalez, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Always, always good to see you. And Carol Wilcock, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Folks, DynamicHealthTechnologies.com is the office in Helena, Dynamic Health Technologies. If you want to call them, set up an appointment for the many things that they can do for you. 406-431-7332. 431-7332. These women know what they're talking about. Stay tuned for more. We'll be back next week, Saturday, for another edition of Gesundheit with Jacobus. Talk to you then.
You're listening to Gesundheit with Jacobus.